Now, earlier this week, Russia banned the Church of Scientology in Moscow simply because, and I quote, it's not a religion. The controversial church claims to have millions of followers, but experts say that they are fabricating the figures. On the line now to speak to us is Tony Ortega, who's been a pain in the church's side since 1995. Welcome to the programme, Tony. Tony, first of all, for those out there who have no idea, what is Scientology?
You know, the most basic definition I can give it is that L. Ron Hubbard, a science fiction writer, back in 1950, announced that he had been the first person to understand the human mind. And what he came up with is the idea that we're all immortal beings, but we've lost sight of our true natures. And only through his counseling can we regain that vision of ourselves as immortal creatures who have lived countless lifetimes.
Right, that's how he puts it, and that's how he put it. He died in the mid-1980s, of course, and it's just been carried on now, and they have loads and loads of followers, Scientology, or do they? Do they have as many today as they might have done 25 years ago?
The top former executives who had actual access to enrollment documents tell me that Scientology reached its greatest size in 1990 with about 100,000 people. It's down to about 40,000 today. They've never had the millions that they claim.
And they claim a lot of things. But you, by the way, have been, as I say, a thorn in the side. You do a daily blog about the Church of Scientology. You did the Raw story for the last few years. Editor-in-chief of Village Voice for a bunch of years. You were a whistleblower back in LA for a good while too. And you've been criticising Scientology for about 20 years now. In terms of your criticism of Scientology, how has the impact been on you as a person? Have you ever been threatened? Have you ever got into trouble?
I have, and I usually would not talk about it very much, but I was in the Alex Gibney documentary Going Clear this year.
Yeah.
And Alex asked me about it, and so I went ahead and talked about that yeah, they've tried to really mess with me with anonymous smear websites. They sent their chief Dirty Tricks private investigator to my mother's house a couple of times. You know, they try to make things difficult for me, but nothing compared to what they've done to some of their former members.
One of those former members, by the way, one of the very first to do anything about it many, many years ago, you wrote a book about her and are now friendly with her. Who is she and what happened?
She's not a former member. She's one of the first journalists to write about Scientology. Her name is Paulette Cooper. Yeah. She wrote a book about Scientology in 1971. Scientology then did everything it could to destroy her life, and they got her indicted for a felony that had her facing 15 years in prison, something she hadn't actually done. And they came very close to convincing her to kill herself. And she went through years of just incredible harassment, and which I've documented in that book. It's called The Unbreakable Miss Lovely.
The Unbreakable Miss Lovely. The name Miss Lovely, of course, coming from the Scientologists themselves. And there was all sorts of FBI investigations into her. They were infiltrating the US federal government as well. And when the federal government themselves or the FBI decided to do something about it, it became one of the biggest kind of investigations in its history. And yet, nothing seemed to happen to Scientology, or nothing seemed to happen even when they found out that the woman in question was completely being victimized.
They did send 11 top Scientologists, including Mary Sue Hubbard, the wife of the founder, did go to prison. But it took several years for that to happen. And you know what happens, Dave, is that something starts out on page one, but as time goes on, it was way back in the back pages when those people finally went to prison. And that was back in the late 70s, early 80s when there was no internet. Things are much different now. People are much more aware of what's going on. There's a persistent memory because of the internet. Movies like Going Clear and the book Troublemaker by Leah Remini, all these things are combining to make things very difficult for Scientology today.
So in other words, they are facing a tsunami of criticism, if you like, and the internet most definitely making it free for all opened all the floodgates. I mean, the church has taken a series of body blows from journalists, former members. There's all sorts of protests. The Hacker Collective Anonymous do loads of things in the streets and make no bones about it. There's your man Lawrence Wright, etc. There's so many, the New York Exposé, Time Magazine, even like way back. Didn't Time Magazine do something to the point where he tried to bring them to court or something?
It was a very crucial time. It was. I mentioned previously that Scientology's greatest extent was probably the year 1990. Yeah. In 1991, Time Magazine came out with that cover story, which was brutal. I mean, it called it the global cult of greed or something. Scientology couldn't stand for that. They sued Time for $416 million. They ultimately lost that suit, but Time ended up spending $6 to $8 million defending themselves. And how Scientology benefited from that was it produced a chilling effect on the media for many years. But there's no question that that single article has an amazing legacy that I think Scientology is still feeling today. But I did want to add, with all of the bad press, Scientology's number one problem is still internal. Hubbard died in 1986. David Miscavige has been running it ever since. And David Miscavige has a real crisis of faith going on, and he's losing a lot of people.
Okay, well, let's take a look at this guy, because, I mean, there are those, and you'll see them in the movie you mentioned, like, I mean, Tom Cruise, they all seem to love the guy. There's Will Smith, so many people, like, are big names. David Miscavige, who is he exactly? And, like, I know that he's a guy who's now in charge and took control because his father was, first of all, somebody who introduced him to Scientology?
That's right. They were a family from New Jersey, and David had asthma, and his father wanted to find a cure, and for some reason he thought Dianetics might help. And they got completely into it to the point where David dropped out of high school and the whole family went to England so David could train as an auditor. He then made his way to America and became very close to L. Ron Hubbard. He was very young, but Hubbard saw something in him for some reason. And when Hubbard died in 1986, even though Hubbard had appeared to anoint some other people to replace him, David muscled everyone out of the way and took over and became the ultimate leader of Scientology. And he has been ever since. And he's still only 55 today. He's been running it for 29 years. They got to give him some credit for that. But he's so ruthless in a way that Hubbard would be really, he would sometimes relent, you know. He would crack a joke. But Miscavige is so relentless, and he's put so much pressure on them to give money that he's losing a lot of people. And that's Scientology's biggest problem right now.
Well, one of the things that Time magazine said, that he was the ringleader of a hugely profitable global racket. And he intimidates, he menaces, he gets on top of people like the mafia might have done, or in a mafia-like manner is the actual thing. He's humiliated and beaten his staff. And many of those who've left says that's exactly what happened. And they've seen other people getting humiliated and beaten, not just themselves. I mean, is he as vicious and as crazy as are the sort of talk of sexual harassment and all that, are they well-founded?
Well, in 2009 was a major moment because a lot of these top, among the people leaving were some top former executives. They all went public in the St. Petersburg Times in Florida in 2009 and revealed that Miscavige was not just verbally tearing people apart, he was beating people up. He put his top executives in an office prison. And, you know, if you're an office worker, imagine if the boss just basically closed the door, locked it, took the key away and left you there for several years with your coworkers. That's what he did to his top lieutenants. It's called the hole. And there were people in there for 6 or 7 years who weren't allowed to leave this room. And it's no wonder he's losing members.
Where's his wife?
Well, that's a great question. Shelley Miscavige helped run Scientology with him to the point where in 2004, she was the one who was entrusted to run that operation where they were auditioning women to be Tom Cruise's next girlfriend. So she was at the top of the pyramid with him, and then suddenly in the late summer 2005, she vanished. Now, I'm pretty sure I know where she is based on several different lines of evidence. There's this little mountain compound above Los Angeles near Lake Arrowhead, super secret location. Most Scientologists don't even know about it. I believe she's been there for the last 10 years. And I think just their marriage fell apart or some other things happened, and he just wanted her out of the way. And when Leah Remini came out, she actually filed a missing person report on Shelley, and the police checked on her and said that she didn't want to make a public statement. So she may be resigned to her fate that she's being kept at this little compound above L.A. But, you know, it's kind of amazing that David Miscavige has been able to get his wife out of the way for a decade.
What about you, Tony? Have you ever, in terms of your 20 years, have you ever, like, tried to become a member? Have you ever decided, I'm going to check this thing out so that I'll know what I'm talking about even more so by looking at it from the inside?
No, I go with the original documents. I mean, I've read Dianetics cover to cover. I've read transcripts of auditing sessions. I've talked to people, hundreds and hundreds of people that were at the top of the organization, as well as people that were just normal workers. And, you know, and the main thing is to read Hubbard. I mean, a lot of people, you know, are interested in Scientology, but it's, you know, you actually have to listen to Hubbard's lectures. And the guy wrote millions of words, and it's all in there. It's all in there as far as what these people believe and what they're doing. They can't change a word. And he died in 1986, but they can't alter anything. So whenever you wonder why are they acting in certain ways, You just have to go back to the policies Hubbard laid down, and it's all spelled out black and white.
Do you know, it's a funny thing that people talk about being a former science fiction writer, and people say it's obviously ludicrous and people must be bonkers if they want to join Scientology, etc. But I mean, like, it's all there in the Quran if you want to go to Islam. It's all there in the Bible if you want to go to Catholicism. And, like, you know, a lot of people live their lives by the Bible and the Quran. And, like, if you want to live your life by Dianetics, is it that bad?
Well, you know, Alex Gibney asked me that question for the movie Going Clear, and here's how I explained it. You're right, there's a lot of crazy stuff in the Bible, but you and I can just pick one up and look at it, and there it is. And they're very open about it. If you want to join Christianity, they're very open about what they believe. The essential problem I have with Scientology is that they're so secretive and they don't tell you those things. You have to be in Scientology for several years and have spent several $100,000 before they start to level with you about what they actually believe, that you're going to be spending $1,000 an hour to have invisible alien souls removed from your body, from OT3 to OT7. If you knew that going in, would you join? That's the problem. That's the problem I have with Scientology, is that bait and switch where they tell you up front, oh, no, this is just an applied philosophy where we help you with your communication. And it's not until you're 8 years in and $500,000 in that you realize you're going to be pulling out these invisible aliens from yourself.
What do members actually get? I get the impression what it is this. They get some super confidence given to them in terms of how to deal with their daily lives for the first while. And then once they've been reeled in, they can't get back into the water because they're on that line.
Well, they not only do exactly what you're saying, where at the lower levels, it's really just about confidence. But after that, they hold out the possibility of superhuman abilities. There's no question that once Scientologists are hooked, they believe once they get to the top of what's called the bridge, they will have superhuman powers.
Are you telling me, Tony, that Scientology has never made a superhuman?
They have not demonstrated it so far, unfortunately. I mean, wouldn't we all want to be impervious to disease, have a total recall, be able to leave our bodies, affect a matter with their mind? And all those things are supposedly waiting for you at the top of the bridge. And that's what keeps people going, is, as Paul Haggis explained really well in the movie, the particular level you're on may not be all that working all that well for you, but you know you need to get through it because you want to get to the next one, where the next great secret is. As Hubbard himself said, what you're selling to the public is a mystery sandwich.
A mystery sandwich. And in that mystery sandwich, then, there's a whole regime, there's a training routine, you get your confidence when speaking, you get your life better, and you get hooked on that. And at that point, what? You're asked for a lot more money. And you mentioned up to what, $800 to $1,000 an hour?
Up to $1,000 an hour for counseling at the top end. And let me also make the point, everyone always asks me about the comparison to other religions. Let me also make the point that Scientologists themselves believe that Scientology is an exact science. All the stuff about religion is just for tax reasons. It's just window dressing.
Well, exactly. It says it's a religion, and everybody knows it's saying it's a religion for tax reasons, exactly. Why did Russia this week say, no thanks, it is not a religion?
Well, Russia had a very interesting argument. They said that because it's trademarked in the U.S., it somehow violates Russia's religious freedom laws. I'm a little dubious about the Russian decision. Russia has tried to ban Scientology before, and it has been reversed by the European Court of Human Rights. You know, the real story is that France upheld its conviction of fraud. Scientology is being tried in Belgium right now, and the Netherlands just cut their tax exemption. Scientology has worn out its welcome in Europe. Russia's a special case. They tend to do things a little rashly. And if anything, Scientology is a little more popular there because of it. And I wish Russia would really practice more due process. Right. But it is clear that, you know, Scientology is dying all around the world, but maybe faster in Europe than anywhere else.
Well, are there many people, do you know, in Ireland who would class themselves as Scientologists?
Well, you know, there are very few Scientologists in Ireland at this point.
Well, also this year, Leah Remini, she's released a book where she says that Katie Holmes left her daughter screaming on the floor and that the church used to try and recruit Jennifer Lopez and all those sort of stories. How badly has her book hurt Scientology?
Well, you know, it brings in a whole new audience of people that may have not paid attention to Scientology before. Leah has, you know, such an amazing reach because she's a famous actress. And the book is well done. It's another nuclear bomb hitting Scientology from the outside. But again, you know, Scientologists are really good at ignoring bad press. I still say Scientology's biggest problems are internal, and that's what I try to keep an eye on.
But ignoring bad press, it often that means just, you know, hang on for a while and people will actually forget and then we'll get away with it kind of thing. Isn't that part of what they do? I mean, like, they've got so much money. Are they really, really, really wealthy as an organization?
It's incredible how much money they have for such a small nonprofit organization. And the reason is they have some very wealthy donors that give them incredible amounts of money. They pay their workers pennies an hour, and they don't pay taxes. So with that combination, they've amassed billions of dollars for an organization that today is probably down to only 40,000 people.
Do you know, like, the Tom Cruise side of things that people often point to? I mean, like, if he entered, because he had a very strange upbringing, a strange childhood. He was, you know, he was brought up in so many different places by his mother, and he tried the best to be an actor, and it worked out very well. And once he did, and once he got there, and once maybe Scientology helped him get there, it seems to have taken him possibly to the very top, because very few people have lasted as long as he does, is as big as he is as very good as he is, too. He's more than just a screen presence. He's a damn fine actor. His career seems to work out pretty well in terms of career. I'm not too sure about private life. But, I mean, has he reached the very top that we talk about here? And could he tell us about, you know, the fact that he might have or might not have met a superhuman, or he is a superhuman? I don't know.
Yes, he's up at the top. I think he's at least OT7. I don't think he's done OT8 yet. But this is a guy that has spent thousands of dollars an hour to remove, you know, invisible alien beings from his body. And he's very close to David Miscavige. He was also close to Shelley Miscavige. If there's one person that could tell us about Dave's wife, it's Tom. And why hasn't he done something about that? There, you know, Going Clear also revealed some really uncomfortable truths about Tom and his girlfriends, and you know, some of the things he's done in the name of Scientology. You know, I wrote an open letter to Tom 3 years ago saying that this was going to turn out very bad for him unless he came out and started speaking honestly. Because, you know, there are so many controversies about Scientology ripping apart families. How can he be in the face of an organization that treats people that way? I think this is just going to get worse and worse for him.
And the people that you've met, the people who've left Scientology, they're almost all unhappy, are they? I mean, ultimately, they're chasing something they're not going to get. They finally realize they're not going to get it, and they are unhappy and are willing to talk to you, are they?
Most people who leave Scientology don't want to talk publicly about it. They're either embarrassed about it, or they still have family in, and they're worried about their families being ripped apart, or they work for a Scientology firm and they don't dare talk publicly. Some of the people decide to talk to me. They know they're taking a risk because of Scientology, you know, history of retaliation. And Scientology has retaliated against some of them very, very harshly. But, you know, some people do want the story to be told, and their stories are all completely consistent. Scientology, we know exactly how it operates. We've known for decades how it operates. And really, it's just a matter of, can we get the public to pay attention long enough for some governments to do some investigating? The U.S. came close. In 2009, the FBI launched an investigation into the way they were, you know, treating children and working people around the clock. But that fell apart. And I don't know what it's going to take for these governments to wake up. Like I said, in Europe, it's happening more quickly than it is in the United States.
And Tony, is Scientology still spying on people and their activities? Is it still surveillancing people, if that's the right word?
No question. I mean, a big story that broke earlier this year was that, you know, David Miscavige's own father escaped from their international base in 2012, and two men were arrested that were following him. It turns out they were private investigators hired by David Miscavige. They're being paid $10,000 a week to watch his father and to try to recruit people to be his friends, to be spies. I mean, this is 2013, right? I mean, it's right out of what I was writing about Paulette Cooper in 1969. They, like I said, they follow the same playbook. They cannot change.
No, Tony, I'm just going to think that, like, I mean, obviously, if you're not going to get to Tom Cruise and you're not going to get to David Miscavige, I would imagine that in terms of what you've been doing for the last 20 years, you would love to talk to his father.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's writing a book, and so he's not talking to anybody until that book comes out. It's coming out next year. I think it's going to be a blockbuster. And, you know, I do expect to have some interviews with him when that book comes out.
Right,
so it'll be pretty, you know, electric.
And if David Miscavige sort of goes into the background or goes away, or if his father's book kind of, if his father starts off his book as saying, I'm really sorry for what I started all those years ago, who might take over? Is there somebody else who's there to be able to keep it going?
Not really. I mean, he's really decimated his underlings and imprisoned them, and there's nobody that he shares power with. Everything is in his hands. People always ask me that, what's going to happen? I don't really know. He's not an old man. He seems healthy. I think he's going to be around. But, you know, he's increasingly getting himself in situations where I think the governments around the world may be interested in looking more closely at him. But I just, it would be hard for me to believe there's going to be just a peaceful transfer of power to someone else. Right. I just don't know who that would be.
Okay, well, Tony, it's been a real pleasure to have had you on. And I would get the impression that sometime over the next 10 years, you might see a kind of result that you would have been hoping for over the last 20 years. Or is that me being a little bit too optimistic?
You know what? I'm just a reporter reporting what's going on. I think some major things will happen, probably even sooner than that. And I just want to have a front row seat and record what happens. Right, I really don't know exactly what it is. However it goes, either way, I'll be writing stories.
Well said. Thank you so much for talking to us, Tony. Good luck. Take it easy.
Thank you so much for having me on.